Hello, hello.
Welcome back
to the Gut Feelings Podcast.
We're here from Yasmin's couch.
As per usual in our little Christmassy fort we have going on here. How has your week been so far, Mackenzie?
My week was good. It was kind of busy. Lots of emotional ups and downs.
As per usual.
In true 2020 fashion.
Same here.
Yeah.
Very busy, a lot going on, but we're very excited to be here together talking to you guys again.
Yeah. We had a conversation last week when we had our little weekly sleepover, and we were laying in bed, and I don't even know what sparked it, but we just started talking about our relationships, a little bit about our attachment and what that looks like, what it looks like when we grieve a connection, be it, you know, death, physical separation, or a breakup, or just an ending. And it kind of sparked an idea for a podcast topic. We kind of wanted to use this time in this episode to talk about human connection and how it can look different and it can feel different to each individual person, and just kind of like our experiences with human connections.
You hit the nail on the head, exactly.
Yeah, so I think one thing that we were talking about last week was how we walk away from it, or how we look back on that relationship. Is there any attachment? Is there any feeling of like remorse? Is there any, what those feelings look and feel like to each of us?
Well, I think that kind of brings it to something that I've looked into a little bit this week that surprisingly I didn't do a lot of research on before, but I found it really interesting, which is attachment styles, which many of you may or may not be familiar with. And essentially looking into it, there are four different attachment styles, and I think it'd be really interesting to like talk a little bit about those.
Yeah.
And see what you identify with and what I identify with and how that shows up in our lives. And then for those of you listening, maybe you can relate in some ways, or it can tell you something new about yourself, which is really interesting, and just give you another puzzle piece about you and how you move through the world and through the relationships that you experience. So essentially, and you know, this is coming from somebody who's not a psychologist. I'm just a dumbass with a microphone.
And Google.
Yeah.
And Google. So.
But I just found it really interesting, and maybe you will too, and you can look more into it yourself. But essentially, there are four different types of attachment styles, and the first one is securely attached. Quick note, the way that you form an attachment style, and apparently it's an attachment style that you will have for your whole life and how you move through your relationships, is based on how you were raised and your environment when you were growing up. And it's said to start even before you were born, in utero, which I thought was really, really interesting. So that'll make a little bit more sense going into this. But the first one is securely attached, and this is like quote unquote the healthiest attachment style. So if you had really secure parents who were really confident in their relationship and in themselves, you most likely have this attachment style, which means in relationships you're confident, you're connected, you're trusting, and you're comfortable with independence. So like you and your partner are both fine being independent and having your own lives, and you come together and are stronger doing so.
I'd like to think that is the attachment style that I have, but I have a feeling that it's not, so I'm ready to hear.
Yeah, wait till number three.
Okay, I'm ready.
We'll check back in. The second one is dismissive avoidant, which is kind of your poster child womanizer, one night stand. Well, it doesn't have to be a womanizer, but your poster child that has...
Personizer.
We are inclusive in 2021.
Yeah.
But these are people who typically have difficulty with commitment. They're emotionally independent, but almost to their own fault, because they have difficulty with emotional intimacy and closeness. And this is most likely you if you had negligent or absent parents. And this, you know, none of these mean that that's 100% who you are in every single relationship, but just generally, these could be ways that you find attachments with other human beings. The third one, Mackenzie, is anxious preoccupied, which is essentially the hopeless romantic. So you crave validation and approval and emotional intimacy. You need reassurance, and you fall fast even if it's unhealthy.
That's probably me.
This you might identify with as well if you have, if your love languages for receiving love are like words of affirmation and quality time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you need that reassurance and that validation that that person still...
That's what I was going to say. Attachment styles are attached to love languages.
Well, it's everything. None of these things are the end all be all of who you are. They're all just kind of like little puzzle pieces to help you figure out like how you navigate the world and maybe how the way that you were raised or experiences that you had throughout your life kind of made you who you are.
But yeah, it's not definitive.
Yes, but I think, and we'll get more into that. The last one is disorganized / fearful avoidant, and this is known as the confused attachment style. So you're both dismissive and anxious. You can be fearful of fully trusting others, but you could also be needing approval and validation. And this is really common if you had a childhood of trauma. And this is the one that I think I relate mostly to personally, and not that I had a very traumatic childhood. I mean, I may have thought so when I was a kid, but looking back at it, I had a generally great childhood, but both of my parents came from very traumatic childhoods, so that could be their attachment styles, which then could make that my attachment style.
Yeah, learned behavior.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, in the best case scenario, if you're securely attached, it's most likely because you have two parents with securely attachment styles or secured attachment styles. Mm. Very interesting stuff. But my perspective of this and the reason that I relate mostly to the quote-unquote confused one is because I know personally that my attachment style seems to be different depending on the types of relationships that I have in my life. So I feel 100% securely attached to any friendships that I make. I maybe have a little bit more of the codependent one, the anxious, preoccupied attachment style when it comes to relationships. I like that reassurance and that validation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that could be definitely a result of the way that I was raised and my environment around me growing up. But I'd love to hear more about what you think.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. As you were kind of explaining each one, and as you pointed out or emphasized the anxious, preoccupied attachment style as maybe being close to the way that I am in my relationship, my current relationship. And truthfully, I feel like I want to say so much that I'm secure.
I think we all do.
I think I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm confident. I like know who I am. I know who I am in the relationship, which I do. I don't think it takes away from that. I think you can be have multiple attachment styles, but it's interesting to kind of, like you said, it's from, you know, even before birth, you form these styles. And it's interesting because I'm looking at the way that I was raised and I'm looking at my parents and I'm sort of analyzing what could have caused that attachment style. Both my parents were working really long hours every day. I had a nanny or I was in daycare and things like that. So I guess that makes sense that I'm sort of needing this like validation, or I'm also an only child. And
There it is.
I am an only child, so maybe it is, you know, desiring that validation to feel comfortable or safe, because not that I didn't get it, but that it wasn't, my parents were so busy, and yeah, I didn't really see them much as a kid, I'm looking back on, so maybe that's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting to dive into and to think about, because you don't think about it until you think about it, you know?
Yeah. When I was dating somebody earlier this year, they had asked me about my attachment styles and I didn't really know anything about it. And he had just kind of gone over like the basics of things. And initially I was like, oh, secured. But then when Mackenzie and I were talking last week, and the thing that we were mostly talking about was that just about like long-term relationships, and specifically like long-term relationships with people who are no longer in your life, if that makes sense. So for me, it's once somebody is out of my life and I go through like the few days or whatever it is, depending on the gravity of the relationship itself and how it ended, I have no feelings towards that person at all, or grieving the relationship, or just looking back at that and like missing it for whatever reason, or having feelings towards that. Like, as soon as somebody's not in my life anymore, they're just not in my life anymore. And that could be a positive thing because I'm not focused on the past and wishful thinking and whatever it is, but it's just very interesting thinking back to where did that come from? Like, how did that come about in my life? Mm. Is it a survival mechanism? I don't know. I have no idea. But that kind of circles me back to my point of like feeling like I have multiple attachment styles depending on the type of relationship that I'm speaking about. Because from what I've read, it seems like attachment styles are supposed to kind of be like a definitive, like this is how you attach, or the struggles that you'll have to like overcome in relationships. So that's the other thing I want to mention is that if you are the dismissive avoidant, which is like the player, like one night stand, can't commit, I'm sure we all know some people like that. It doesn't mean that that's going to be who you are for the rest of your life. That's just kind of your default when it's just going to be more difficult for you to get over those hurdles, and the same goes for all of the other attachment styles. So maybe that's kind of more what's into play. Yeah.
I've definitely been the dismissive avoidant. I've definitely been a playboy. I'm not gonna lie. There's a few different phases in my life where I was in that zone, but it is interesting to think about, because I don't think that is my attachment style. Truthfully, it felt sort of like I was playing a role when I was doing that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was more so to treat a different problem, if that makes sense.
It's like a way to protect yourself.
Yeah, it was like a coping mechanism.
A defense mechanism.
Yeah, both. In certain relationships, like with all my friends, yeah, absolutely, I feel so secure. But then I that's what I think on first glance. Mm. But now that we're talking about it, I start to dive into it and think about it. So I just want to preface by saying that I am an avid emoji user. Avid. I love an emoji because I feel like it's such an amazing way of describing how I'm feeling.
Mackenzie's been writing our Instagram captions on at the Gut Feelings Pod, so if you haven't noticed, I have.
I love an emoji. What can I say? I just think it's such a nice way of depicting your exact feeling or creating an emotion or eliciting a response, I guess. Sometimes, first of all, I want to say that Yasmin does not use emojis at all. Yasmin never uses emojis, and I never realized that she did. Like, it was never something that I was like, oh, she just doesn't use emojis. But there was a point in our friendship where I was kind of like, I think that Yasmin's mad at me because she's not using emojis.
I was like, Mackenzie, I just have depression.
But also, Yasmin doesn't use emojis in the same way that I do.
No, well, do you want to know what my perspective of that is? It's that I'm comfortable enough with you. My codependent tendencies don't come out where I feel like I have to perform for you or feel like I have to try extra hard, you know.
For me to understand what you're saying. Exactly. Yeah, no, totally. Looking back on that, that shows me that I do need that validation.
Interesting.
Whether it's, you know, an emoji or Garrett telling me that I'm hot or something. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll tell you that you're hot. I just won't use emojis.
Thanks.
Very interesting.
I think also, while we're talking about attachment styles, I think it's also interesting thinking about the way that we attach to people who are our blood family and how there is guilt.
Mm-hmm. You feel like I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, like you feel like you have to like your family.
Like responsibility.
Yeah. When you feel like you have a responsibility of liking the people who are your blood.
Yeah.
And, or you feel like, oh, it's just my family, like I just have to like them or I have to show up, which, like you said, what did you say earlier?
This might sound a little bit harsh, but my therapist told me because if my mom is listening to this, I'm sorry. But I was telling her, I feel guilty sometimes with the relationship that I have with my immediate family because I know it's not as close as I'm sure that my parents wish that it was. And there are a lot of reasons for that we can get into. But my therapist was like, you didn't choose to be born. Like, you don't owe anyone anything. And there are some aspects of that I 100% agree with. And, like, I don't feel like I should make myself uncomfortable in situations. I think that's, codependency of, like, making myself uncomfortable in situations in order to give people what they expect out of me or what I think they want from me.
It's a layered comment. That's a layered idea. Mm-hmm. So I resonate with what she's saying too.
I can resonate and understand with what she's saying, but of course, I also, for my own benefit, want to put in the amount of work that I'm comfortable with, because I don't want to have to, you know, deal with that guilt or deal with that, you know, if something ever were to happen. Like, I know that I would regret not spending time with my family or not, you know, showing them how much I love them, even though maybe my ways, as Mackenzie just explained, of showing love is a little bit different.
Yeah. I think that you set boundaries as an adult child. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, being the child as an adult child. You set boundaries and
that should be your new bio. Adult child.
That's really who I am. But you set boundaries as an adult and with your parents and with your family, with whoever is in your circle, right? And I think it's important to have that conversation with yourself and figure out what boundaries feel comfortable and what boundaries feel uncomfortable. And maybe the actions that feel a little more uncomfortable are worth, you know, hashing out. There's certain things that you know that you have to push yourself to do a little bit because you don't want to feel that guilt. I think similarly, I had a relationship with my mom, and mom, if you're listening to this, love you. But I had a relationship with my mom when I was a teenager that was incredibly strained, and there was a period of time where we didn't even speak. Coming back to that and seeing where we are in our relationship now, that distance, that time that was necessary for us to be able, those boundaries that I had set as a teenager, I am proud of myself for setting, because it has led to a communicative, effective relationship. And there are certain things that I still have boundaries on with my relationships with both of my parents and my, you know, immediate family. And I think it's just about navigating that and dissecting the reasons why we do have those aversions to certain things that our family wants from us.
Yeah, and I think setting boundaries is going to be beneficial for whoever's involved in the relationship, because then hopefully there's no resentment. And I feel like resentment is a big part or a big strain on a lot of relationships, whether that's platonic or family or romantic. Being able to set boundaries and communicate and talk about what you want and what you don't want, and to be clear with those boundaries, saves your relationship from resentment.
It does.
Yeah,
it does. I think touching on family, we also have our chosen family, where I consider you part of my chosen family. I consider Garrett part of my chosen family. His family is part of my chosen family. My other really close friends that have been in my life for however much time. There's chosen family that I have that's been in my life since I was a teenager, and there's chosen family that I have that's been in my life for this year. I think that's the special part of being a human, is getting to form attachments with people who feel like family.
Yeah,
that's really special.
I think we're both very lucky in that way to really have amazing chosen family. I've said it before and I'll say it again a million times. I am so grateful and appreciative of my chosen family. And like I said in the last episode, it also makes me feel good about myself to know that the people who are surrounding me are so amazing, and I am just so impressed and grateful for everybody. It makes me feel good that they're choosing to be in my life, because it means that I must be doing something right. So that's really awesome.
I feel the same about my chosen family, and I think that's what is so awesome about being an adult and getting to like realize that you do choose your family.
Yeah, and I think you should never feel guilty about having an amazing community around you that maybe isn't biologically related to you. It doesn't discredit or invalidate your actual family if you do love your parents and have an amazing relationship with them.
Yeah, I mean, setting boundaries with your family or even with friendships, platonic friendships or romantic relationships, includes having that feeling of like, someone that I used to know. And I remember touching back on what you were saying earlier, where you kind of like, it's a little more cut and dry, like you walk away and you're like,
not cold hard bitch.
Not really thinking about them. Like, I look back, I play it out like a movie. I look back and I'm like, I'm remembering all the memories, and I'm not like reliving heartbreak and talking in a romantic sense or even in a platonic sense, but just looking back with this film reel in my head. And
that's the hopeless romantic in
yeah
you.
there she is,
there's that attachment style,
sort of looking back and seeing how that shaped me is something that I do often. I'll like daydream, and I mean, I'm not just constantly living in the past or anything, but I'll just sometimes find myself, you know, thinking about maybe a specific memory, or maybe I'm in a place that reminds me of a person or whatever it may be. And this is also people who I've lost in my life, people who have died that I love very dearly or loved very dearly. That sort of feeling of I can feel it. I can feel all those feelings really real, in a really real and tangible way still. And looking back and seeing how those memories shaped me to be who I am today, being able to look back in a fond way, I think is, you know, what we hope to get to. I remember having a heartbreak with my, I guess I'll just dive into it, with my ex-girlfriend. And I remember we weren't together very long, but it was the first woman I was ever in a relationship with. And it was the heartbreak that you, I know you haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, but
I'm an uncultured.
But for those of you listening who've seen Call Me By Your Name, like that heartbreak, and sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but that heartbreak at the end, I literally was sobbing for just afterwards for hours, because I was like, oh God, that, like, oh my God, it hurts so bad. But I also look back and it almost releases serotonin mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. looking back, because I'm like, whoa, I felt so much. Mm-hmm. And it was such a learning experience, mm-hmm. but damn, did it take me a long time to fucking heal? Like it takes a long time to heal from heartbreak.
Yeah. Well, I think the length of the relationship doesn't matter as much as the impact that the relationship had on you. Like I had a 3-year relationship with somebody that I truly thought I was going to marry and I have a kid with. So unfortunately I still have to, they're still in my life. It's not one of those
cut and dry.
I can't just fucking forget about them. But that relationship, it took me like 2-3 days maybe to not care romantically. Of course, like there's trauma there that I'm gonna have to deal with for the rest of my life, but in terms of the romantic aspect of the relationship, like, was very easy for me to grieve and get over. But then I had a 2.5-week relationship with somebody, if you can even call it that, that's the one that I can relate to in a little bit, where yeah. I can think back to it and be like, wow, that was so amazing, because this was a relationship. Again, if you can call it, well, I guess every interaction that you have with a human is a relationship, but this was an experience that taught me so much, not only about myself, but what I'm looking for and like other things that I want in somebody that I meet. And so I just have so much gratitude and like so much love for that relationship and for that person, even though it was so short-lived, it was harder for me to get over than the 3-year relationship. So it's 100% about impact. And then kind of moving on to like a little bit of a different subject, but still with in the same realm of human connection, is something that we've also talked about before, which is compartmentalizing relationships and friendships and things like that. And this also ties in with codependency, but it's like not expecting, well, honestly, you should not expect anything from anyone. Like mm-hmm. as soon as you have an expectation of how and who somebody should be is when you're let down, no matter what that looks like, but not expecting one person or a few people to be everything for you. And that is where secure attachment style comes in, where you have your own independent lives, and there are certain things that I need from a relationship that I get from you, and some things that I get from my other friends. And I think that I do a really good job of compartmentalizing that. I didn't always do that. I can 100% recognize my own codependent tendencies, but I think that that's something really important to mention, because it's something that I struggled with a lot, of like my expectations of other people and feeling like I need one person or a certain amount of people to fill something that I need in my life. And I think it's totally okay to get certain things from certain people, because I'm sure you offer a different kind of value in all of your friends' lives as well.
Totally. It's actually so crazy that you just brought up compartmentalizing friendships, because I remember being in high school and going through my first friend breakup, and I remember going to my like family therapist and having this emergency session because I was so distraught, because I was like, that's my one friend. This is my person. What do I do? Not that it was my only friend, but this was the person that I had let in and been the most vulnerable with, and vice versa, in my opinion, it felt like. And my therapist said those exact words. She's like, you have to, one of the best things you could do is learn to compartmentalize your friendships and know that you go to, I'm making up random names here, but like you go to Sally for, you know.
Has anybody ever actually met? Oh, wait, I know a Sally.
Oh, okay. But go to Sally for relationship advice. You go to, you know, why am I thinking of like generic white people names like Todd? Like Todd. Sally or Todd. But you go to this one friend for this and you go to your other friend. I remember in high school, she was like for shopping spree dates or something like something so ridiculous and trivial. It was really educational and honestly so necessary at that time because I truly did not have any idea how to do that or what that looked like. I had always sort of, I really did have codependent tendencies with friendships.
Makes a lot of sense with your attachment style.
Yeah. I'd always cling to one specific friend and it was like, that's my sister. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my person.
I did that growing up as well. I always had like one person I was obsessed with and then we would have like a little, not maybe a falling out, but like grow apart and then it would be another person and be another person.
Do you remember? I'm sure that you had a similar experience based off of what you're saying, but where you would be with like that best friend and then maybe that best friend. I think they did you watch Pen 15?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when that.
Yes, I've had that experience.
The third like best friend
or like a new person comes in and maybe connects with your best friend like in a way that makes you uncomfortable or
it was always so it always led to hurt feelings. My mom was always like, you can't hang out with three people, there needs to be four if you're all girls or whatever.
Smartly.
Yeah. But
as an adult, I mean, it's you can 100% hang out with three people.
Yeah.
Well, I think the way, I'm assuming this is the way that everybody makes connections with people, but I know, especially for myself personally, is I make connections with people based on like common experience and being able to relate to them in different ways. And we're all so different and so unique. Even if you have that one person, you feel like you're exactly the same. There are ways in which you're not. You and I are so different on so many levels and like the circumstances of our lives are so opposite, but I relate to you so much so that we're sitting here talking into a microphone. But, you know, I also relate to our friend Lexi in so many ways. Like we are so similar, but then there are some things in that relationship where I relate to my friend Lauren more, who I also work with.
Right. No, there's definitely different things that you get out of each relationship, friendship, relationship.
Well, that goes romantically as well. I think, you know, I'm not in a relationship, so I'm going to use yours as an example, but I think people in general like go to their significant others thinking like they're my partner, so they should be providing everything for me. Mm-hmm. And this is, I've done this 100% too, but it's like, you know, maybe telling Garrett everything about your day or everything, every thought, every experience is putting too much pressure and like expecting too much out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Where like thinking a little bit more consciously of the parts of your relationship that you guys share together. Mm-hmm. And so, and then coming to me for certain things.
Yeah.
And to Lexi for certain things.
Totally. I definitely spread it out. And I think that was such a valuable thing to learn. I remember being so passionate about finding someone that would be my best friend as a partner, right? I remember wanting to get into a relationship with someone that would just be my best friend in that way, where we could talk about anything together. I was sort of seeking it out in a really weird way and not really having the capacity to look inward and look at how I can find that in a person, but also it doesn't have to look like what I think it's supposed to look like. I don't have to have expectations of that best friendship or partnership. Garrett and I are best friends. He's the only partner, one of the only partners that I've had this experience with where we just truly are best friends. And it feels so safe and it feels so comfortable. But yeah, I don't tell him everything and not in a secretive way, but like I don't tell him the things that I would say to Yaz or my friend McKenna or Lexi.
You mean about losing three Instagram followers today? I told Mackenzie she's no longer allowed to tell me when she loses Instagram followers because it's gonna happen.
I think it just perplexes me because I just feel like it almost feels like I lost a friend, right? Like it, not in the same.
You
not,
know what?
Not
this
on the
is
same
really
level.
Making sense with it's, your attachment style.
It almost feels like, God. Oh, like you know, there's a moment, and I know that. It, and I was telling Yaz, like, it's not rational. It's so ridiculous, but I have to like externalize it sometimes just to be like, oh, this happened. But Yasmin is over it. I bring it up every time.
Oh, but, my God.
You know, it doesn't matter, truthfully, but it does feel like, you know,
like rejection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wouldn't, there's certain things I don't tell Garrett. And not, in, like I said, not because I'm keeping a secret, but because I want to be able to share whatever that thing is with someone that is going to feel as excited about it with me. Yaz and I will listen to Justin Bieber's Holiday album together, whereas, you know, Garrett's probably a little less interested.
There's just rude.
There's just certain small things.
For sure.
But it's nice to find those balances.
To wrap up the episode, before we get into Spill Your Guts, I just want to know what your love languages are, both giving and receiving, and maybe we'll get more into that in another episode. And that's more about like romantic partnerships. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to get to know a little bit more about you, even though I think I know what they are. I think I touched on them earlier, but I'd like to hear your perspective of that.
Well, first of all, for those of you that don't know, I just want to quickly explain the five love languages. Not explain, say. There's quality time. There's giving gifts, acts of service, words of affirmation, and physical touch. So I think that the way that I show that I love other people is with words of affirmation and acts of service, which sometimes I think acts of service can kind of spread into giving gifts. Mm-hmm. My friends and neighbors get a lot of food from me that I make for them. So
sourdough, focaccia. It's really just
lentil
Mackenzie's
soup.
Love language is carbs
or chocolate.
Yeah.
But I think the love languages that I like to receive are quality time, words of affirmation.
Yeah, that's what I
definitely
that was
words
my guess
of affirmation.
For you.
Yeah.
So
I'm a communicative bitch.
If you are ever communicating with Mackenzie, make sure to use emojis or she's not gonna feel loved, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, emojis are bust, pretty much.
My, like, the ways that I show that I love somebody, the first one is acts of service, I would say. Like, I'm very much, like, even, you know, just for myself, not in a relationship right now, like, I'm very much a homemaker, and I love doing things for people to show that I love them, or making things really special for people, or just, like, putting time towards making somebody's life a little bit easier. And then I think the second one is probably quality time. I very much want to spend a lot of time with somebody whenever I am in a relationship with them. And I mean, who doesn't want to spend time with somebody that they enjoy spending time mm-hmm. with? And then the ways that I receive love the best is very hard for me to really break down, because I think the ways that I really can conceptualize the fact that somebody cares about me are any of them. Like, I can recognize really easily if somebody is spending time with me or doing something for me, or physical touch and like physical intimacy and things like just all of them, I feel like make me feel really, really loved. And I don't know if there's a specific one. I do like receiving gifts, but not so much material big things. Like, that actually makes me a little bit uncomfortable. But like, I stop by the store and I know how much you love this kombucha or this chocolate, and I was thinking of you. So I think that's more of like the thought of me without me having to put any effort towards that.
Right.
That really makes me feel loved.
Yeah, I think it boils down to even in the way that you, like, I know when we were talking about you dating, you were saying how you want someone to just say like where you're going for dinner, and mm-hmm. just like, and obviously that runs into like energy dominant versus submissive, which is a whole nother podcast topic. But I think that also, even just that, the act of
it's that thought put into like, how can I make their life easier, or how it's just
right.
like that extra little something. What Mackenzie is saying is like, if I go on a first date with somebody, I really look for somebody who's like, okay, great, let's go here, on this day at this time, like, I'll pick you up then. Like, I don't want to make any fucking decisions. Like, I make so many decisions. I take care of everybody all the time. But that's really attractive to me. You can find me on Hinge.
Yeah, you can Raya. Find me on Hinge. And we would love to know your attachment styles and your love languages. I think it's just so interesting to dive into. So let us know.
Yeah, let us know in our latest Instagram post. Or if you want to leave a 5-star review and let us know, please do. Thank you so much for listening to our episode about human connection. We are just kind of rambling based off of our personal experiences, and we hope you can find some value in this episode. And thank you so much for listening. So this is the part of the episode where we do Spill Your Guts, which is essentially just sharing your highs and lows of the week. Just a quick reminder, we are recording this in December before actually launching the episode. So this is a few weeks ago at this point, but we just want to kind of get into the habit of doing this and still think we could somehow maybe provide some value or some insight into our personal lives with this segment. So I will let you go ahead and start.
Yeah, we just want to be relatable. okay, my high of the week. No, I'll start with my low, right? Okay.
Yeah, we end with a high note.
Okay, you're right. My high of... Oh, no.
She's hungry, guys.
I have to pee. I'm hungry. I'm ready. My low of the week was probably getting 2 hours of sleep the night before I taught a virtual class, a virtual workshop, and just sort of running on fumes. But it did end up turning around to be a high of my week, because teaching those workshops was so fun and so rewarding and just such a highlight of my week. So it made those 2 hours of sleep completely irrelevant. And then I got to take an afternoon nap, which was also a delight because I love a good nap.
I love how both of yours were full circle, and I'm gonna do the same thing now. So my low of the week was that, so I really don't get a lot of negativity on social media, and I'm very grateful for that. And again, I must be doing like something right. Not that I think you're doing anything wrong if you do, but I ended up getting a comment on one of my Instagram posts that definitely, like, I'm a very sensitive person and things affect me really easily. So I definitely felt like anxiety and was affected, but I took a couple hours to respond, and I made sure to do a little bit of research and everything before responding, and really putting a lot of thought into like what I wanted to respond, because it wasn't just a shitty, you know, fuck you comment or anything like that. Like, it was somebody really trying to call me out for something. And my high of the week was that I felt like I handled that situation really well. I thought I responded very eloquently and like very generally, and was doing it based on facts and not feelings, and I kind of turned it around. And the other high was that the post that that person was commenting on is a post that I decided to make and be a little bit more vulnerable on social media, which is very difficult for me, not because I don't want to be authentic or that I want people to think I have an amazing life, but as a perfectionist, I just like overthink things a lot and overanalyze, and like I'm very judgmental of myself and the things that I do, and like get really embarrassed easily and whatever it is. And it's silly, because essentially the post was just like a bio of myself and what the past 5 years of my life have looked like, but it was a pretty big deal for me to do that and get past that feeling of like, oh, am I oversharing, or are people going to think that I'm just like looking for attention or looking for validation or whatever it is. And it just felt really good to like kind of put that out there and have some of you get to know me a little bit better. And yeah, that was my high, getting past something that was kind of difficult for me to get past, even if it seems trivial to some of you out there, and just like feeling good about doing that.
Yeah, and you also landed in a sea of support.
Yeah.
It feels so good.
Yeah, for sure. It does feel good. Of course.
That's not why you do it.
Well, yeah, there's a little bit of like, oh, well, does that mean that I'm doing that? Like, am I looking for the validation? Am I looking for attention in a certain way? And it really wasn't about that. If nobody commented, I think I would have felt the same way about it. It was more just my own obstacles that I had put in front of that. So hopefully that kind of gets some momentum going on doing a little bit more of that. I mean, at least on this podcast, it will.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm very proud of you. And I'm very proud of all of you for surviving almost a year of a global pandemic. And I don't just mean like physically surviving, but I mean just with the entire weight of the circumstances of the world right now. And again, I don't know what it's going to look like next month, but we're really proud of all of you and very grateful that you have taken some time out of your day to listen to us talk about ourselves, and hope that you find some kind of value or are able to laugh or relate to us in some kind of way. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We really are so grateful that you're here.
Have a great day.
Love you.